It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, host of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast, brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. The show is available to listen to now and right up to the end of the season, when the winners of the Champions Cup will be crowned at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and the fight for the Premiership title will be decided at Twickenham. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions. Subscribe and download now wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
From London's South Bank, I'm Mark Blunden, and this is the Standard Podcast. A red Ford Escort Cabriolet XR3i, draped with a giant doily, is among artworks nominated for this year's Turner Prize, as Britain's prestigious contemporary creative competition marks its 40th anniversary. Four artists who are shortlisted to win the £25,000 prize include three Londoners, whose work ranges from traditional drawing to more eccentric installations. Previous winners include household names of Gilbert and George, Damien Hirst and Sir Anthony Gormley, and of course Tracy Emin, who's among celebrated nominees with her unmade bed installation, which was shortlisted in 1999. But as the Turner Prize turns 40, is it still relevant? And are the nominees, including Jazlene Kaur and Claudette Johnson, household names of the future? The competition has certainly been divisive and spoofed over the years, previously derided by the naysayers as banal, cold, mechanical, and even as an annual farce. That one was the Evening Standard's acerbic late art critic, Brian Sewell. And so what is the health of London's post-COVID art scene? And why am I outside the South Bank Centre? Well, it's because the organisation's chief executive, Elaine Beddle, highlighted its financial struggles as the institution needs to find around £50 million to fund urgent repairs. Beddle even suggested in an interview with The Guardian that one solution could be to sell naming rights to this grand brutalist complex. Now let's head back into the studio, where I'm joined on the line by Evening Standard arts correspondent Robert Dex. Rob, how striking are the works shortlisted this year?
Well, it's difficult to say till you've seen them all together. There is a Turner Prize exhibition at Tate Britain where you can go and see the best of these shortlisted works. And some things obviously will work different in a gallery to, just reading about them now. But certainly, yes, Jazlene Kaur's work, which includes a red Ford Escort, I imagine will probably stand out. Not only a red Ford Escort, but a red Ford Escort covered in an enormous cotton doily. And not only a red Ford Escort covered in an enormous cotton doily, but a red Ford Escort covered in an enormous cotton doily with a huge sound system in the boot, I think, playing out music, apparently. That, I imagine, will get people's attention as they walk around. I mean, the Turner Prize being the Turner Prize, there are traditional portraits here done in pastel and watercolour, which will please some of the more traditional art aficionados as well. And you never know, it's when you walk around, things often pop out that you maybe didn't expect that, will strike you.
Can you give us a bit of context about the Ford Escort and some of the inspiration for the other entries this year?
She's described it as representing her dad's migrant desires, in quotes. I mean, it comes from a big show which she's done, which is all about sort of growing up in the Sikh community in Glasgow. I think that was pretty much her dad's first car. The speakers, pumping out the music were like the ones made by her older brothers. So it's all about her growing up and her childhood. So there's that, which is obviously very, very striking. But I mean, the other nominated artists, there's people who are putting their sketches next to museum pieces from Oxford that were sort of seized from all over the empire. And that artist is from the Philippines. And it's obviously referencing growing up in the Philippines and coming to this country. And it mentions things like the Benin bronzes, which are famous treasures, some of which have been returned to Africa quite recently. So that's all about conversations of restitution and where art comes from and who gets to keep it and do you give it back and that kind of thing. The more traditional stuff, somebody like Claudette Johnson. So there's pastel watercolour images of black men and women. And she very, very straightforwardly says she wants to tell a story about what she calls our presence, meaning the presence of black people in this country. And so obviously that is all bound up with her background and growing up and where she comes from. And the last artist, it's all about her family background. Then I think her grandmother died fairly recently, and it's all inspired by her death, and she's from Roma background. So actually, even though all these artists are all doing extremely different things, they're really often powered by, it seems to me, very similar thoughts and emotions, and kind of a, who am I? Where do I come from? Where am I now? And how have I got from one end to the other end? And that thought process and that emotion has produced hugely different work, but they've all got sort of a common thread running through them, I would say.
And the Turner Prize at 40, is it still relevant in your view?
I think it is. I mean, the Turner Prize was set up essentially to put a focus on contemporary British art. That's literally its job. And here we are talking about contemporary British art, which we don't normally do every other day of the week, do we? So it's working. I think that's what they would say. You know, there'll be pictures probably of this car in the newspapers today and tomorrow and on websites. People will be saying, what on earth is that all about? What the hell does she mean by that? That's not art. That is art. And that is literally what the Turner Prize was set up to do. So I would say they're succeeding pretty well.
And how come some of the entries, even those not winning, still remain so memorable all these years later?
The thing with the Turner Prize is, I think when you say Turner Prize to most people, they probably say, oh yeah, Tracy Emin's bed, when she had that unmade bed and, you know, two guys leapt on it, didn't they, and tried to make it even more unmade. But of course, famously, Tracy Emin didn't win. So perhaps the most famous ever entry to the Turner Prize is one that didn't win it, which perhaps says something about prizes, isn't it? Because, you know, prizes are given out in books, music, whatever, every year. And you look down the big list of winners going back, in this case, 40 years, and some of them you will have never heard of again. And there'll be some people who didn't win who've gone on to be massively successful. That's the nature of prize, isn't it? It's a bit hit and miss. You know, sometimes it lands on the right target and the person that they say is the best is probably the best and goes on to have a great career. Other times they miss out. So yeah, it's funny. It's indelibly linked to Tracy Emin, who is the person who didn't win it. Perhaps says something about the nature of prizes.
Let's go to the ads coming up. The financial challenges for London's art scene. Why not hit follow in the meantime? Give us a rating.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, host of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast, brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. The show is available to listen to now and right up to the end of the season, when the winners of the Champions Cup will be crowned at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and the fight for the Premiership title will be decided at Twickenham. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions. Subscribe and download now wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back. What's the story about the possible renaming of the South Bank Centre?
There was a fairly wide-ranging conversation with the head of the South Bank, in which she basically said, you know, we don't have enough money to repair this huge, vast building. That's what you've always got to think about the South Bank, the size of that enormous, brutalist concrete building. And I think somebody said, would you consider selling naming rights? And I think she's probably said, do you know what? We're so short of cash, I'd consider pretty much anything. So I don't think they've said, yes, we're definitely going to do it yet, and this is the plan. And I think she was more using it as a kind of, this is how bad things are, that we would consider selling off. I mean, they may well do, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it goes to show a couple of things, doesn't it? That post-COVID, the arts have recovered, but they've not recovered fully to what they were. So things like, I'm sure at the South Bank, their ticket sales will be down, things like that. Also, budget cuts have come in year on year from the Arts Council, from government. We know that, doesn't matter whether you're talking about the arts or the National Health Service or social care or schools or whatever, we are not flush with cash at the moment, are we? And what she's basically saying is that we need more. And also, I think at the minute, if you're an arts administrator, not unlike anything else, I mean, it's a bit like the high street, you see the big shops closing down, because obviously we've had huge rise in energy bills. Small is beautiful at the minute. If you've got an enormous, enormous building that needs heating, water, lights, that's just blown a hole in your budget. Whether it's an art centre, department store, further education college, whatever it may be, you've had to rapidly change your budgeting because a huge amount is going on energy now. You know, as the sun comes out and people stroll down by the river, everyone loves the South Bank, don't they? But how many people stroll down the river and going through the doors rather than just have it as the background of their photos. Times are tough, and it's a big old building with a lot of staff. You know, we've seen the same at the Barbican. There's a big master plan at the Barbican to try to sort of rebuild and fix some of it. These are all big post-war buildings that, you know, time is probably catching up with them, and they're very, very expensive to run and maintain. We all want them to stay, so, you know, they need it to be well run and maintained, but it's an expensive business.
In terms of the health and, crucially, the funding of London's art scene post-COVID, are you optimistic there's a way out to bolster the coffers?
There's a way forward. I don't think there's a way out. I don't think there's a magic wand at all. And I don't get any sense that, and this is where we get into ifs and buts, isn't it? If there is an election this year, and if we have a change of government, I don't expect there suddenly to be a massive increase in budget. There might be slightly more sympathetic ear, but I don't think they're going to give them a lot more money. I think we could be at a tipping point, basically. I mean, something like the South Bank, you know, built for, you know, after the Festival of Britain, when, you know, we were emerging, but, you know, bankrupt again from the Second World War, but we still found the money to pay for it. But that was all about the state paying for huge grand schemes. And I think maybe those days are gone. And that's what Elaine was getting at in the South Bank. In America, what would happen is a philanthropist would give them millions and millions of pounds, and that would pay for it. And of course, that philanthropist would probably get their name on something, whether it's a room, a gallery, or the entire shebang, which is sort of what she was suggesting. We've never quite gone into that. We don't have that sort of tradition of philanthropy that America have. And in America, it's sort of very set up with tax breaks, things like that. And that may be something we see a new government bringing in that makes it easier to give money, easier to give more money, easier to give more money regularly. And that might change things. But then, you know, you probably end up with the South Bank Centre being called the whatever, you know, the Mr. John Smith South Bank Centre if they find someone to pay for it. So, yeah, interesting times. I don't think there's an easy way out of it. It just comes down to, you know, putting on anything artistic on that scale like the South Bank does is not cheap. There's huge amounts of staff. It's a huge building. They have to keep the lifts working. They have to keep the lights on. And that's even before you get to, you know, bringing in the artists and deciding the work and programming the work. It's a heck of a job. I don't envy you.
There's more on this story in the Evening Standard newspaper and online at standard.co.uk. We're back on Thursday at 4 p.m.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, host of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast, brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. The show is available to listen to now and right up to the end of the season, when the winners of the Champions Cup will be crowned at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and the fight for the Premiership title will be decided at Twickenham. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions. Subscribe and download now wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.